This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance and Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, I'm actor and comedian Griffin Newman.
And I'm film critic David Sim.
Together, we host Blank Check, a movie podcast where week by week we overanalyze directors' complete filmographies.
In each new series, we discuss filmmakers who experience early success and are issued a series of blank checks by Hollywood to make their own crazy passion projects.
Now, sometimes those checks clear and sometimes they bounce, baby.
We're joined each week by incredible guests, including actors, writers, and directors. So you can follow Blank Check with Griffin and David on Spotify for new episodes every Sunday.
The year is 2023. And we're having a party, baby. Hello, everyone, and welcome to
Unspooled.
Hey, everybody, I am Paul Scheer, joined as always by Amy Nicholson.
That's me. Hello.
We normally love to talk about a classic movie on this show. We get into it, we find out what makes it tick. Is it worthy of being one of the greatest films of all time? But this week, we're doing something different. Like Amy said, we are having a party. You can hear the noise here in the background. That is not computer generated, Amy. We are literally having a party. I know people said do not record a podcast during a party, but we can't help it.
Paul, every time I record a podcast with you, it is a party, but I'm usually not holding one bottle of champagne in each hand and another bottle on my head. I'm absolutely doing this right now.
Well, you know what, Amy? I thought it would be a good time at the end of the year to talk about all the films that we loved in 2023. We don't normally get a chance to talk about new films, like brand new films on this show. So what better time to talk about the year past than right now, as we get ready to look forward to a brand new year of brand new movies? And what better way to do it than the way that they did it in The Christmas Carol? We are going to be bringing on today some of our classic producers from the past, some of our classic producers from the present, and maybe at the end of the show, we will have a ghost of a producer from the future. I don't know. I haven't thought that much out. But all I want to say is we are going to be talking about movies with people who love movies just as much as us.
Oh, yeah. We got a lot of buddies here who are trying to jump on this mic and talk about the movies they loved.
That's right. We're going to let them have the mic. All right, Amy. Without any further ado, let's welcome our producers of the present, Josh Richman and Jess Cisneros. Welcome to the show, because you are on the show every week, but you're not on the show. I mean, you have sat through every recording. I feel like you're more versed in any Unspooled film, and we know that you are film nerds, but we don't get to hear from you that much. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be able to chat sometimes. So we're always here hanging out on the Zoom, but we rarely get a chance to actually talk to the good people out there.
I mean, I can imagine there's a lot of times you have to bite your tongue and not be like, you guys are so wrong. What are you not saying about this?
There have been times, but not that often. I'm usually in agreement with you guys.
With me in particular, right?
of course.
I will always be looking for a little emoji of Jess's thumbs up when we hit something good. I know we're on the right track. I will look at faces if we can when we're recording on Zoom. But I'm actually really interested to talk to you about what we've talked about this year and what you like this year that's come out that's brand new. But before we even do that, keeping with our Christmas party vibe and our Christmas Carol-esque line that we're creating here, let's also bring in a producer from the past, Devin Bryant, back to the show. Welcome, Devin.
Hey! Oh, it's so good to see you guys again. Missed
we
you.
Are so excited that you're here.
I'm so excited to see your Zoom backdrop again. I feel like it's just home. It's such a comforting blue screen.
Which is
from Hackers.
Exactly. A movie reference. It's from Hackers. Exactly.
Yes. And, you know, the audience may not realize it, but Devin has gone on and is working, doing some great projects right now. Tell us what shows you're working on right now.
Yeah, I moved over to Smartless Media and I've been helping them launch their shows all year. So I work on Bad Dates with Jameela Jamil. And I also work on Just Jack and Will, the Will and Grace recap show with Sean Hayes and Eric McCormick, which is a blast.
I love it. Well, we know that you are very opinionated as well, and I am excited because you have been a little bit out of the loop about what we've covered. So we're going to go over some of the stuff we've covered. But maybe
I should also mention super quickly that although he couldn't make it, our engineer who's edited every single episode this year, Casey Holford, he's on East Coast time,
okay.
So he couldn't be on the call with us right now. But I'm going to probably read a couple of thoughts about some of the movies of the year from him later as well.
In a French accent is what I heard.
Yeah, see, oui.
Good. That was
already
good.
Working. It's already working. Let's get into it with movies that you really love this year. I was putting together my little letterbox list, and I realized that every big movie is being dumped in the last couple of weeks of the year. So I don't feel like I'm completely up to date on everything that people will be talking about, but I was looking back at the year and thinking, well, not that much came out. There hasn't been like that much great film in the last year. I think there's Barbie and Oppenheimer, of course, but nothing that was like jumping out at me. I have a couple things that I want to talk about that I really like, but I wanted to throw to all of you, like, what were things that you liked? And maybe it's going back a little bit. We don't have to be like right up to date with all the potential award ones. You know, I don't want you to feel that pressure.
Can I crack my knuckles and be like, I'm up to date with those, man? We already did our last vote. I have covered this.
I saw what was going on with that, Amy, because you, people who don't know, like, you are part of the LA Film Critics Society, and you voted on, you basically, you start the race. Right? It's like, this is where it begins.
New York gets us a little bit ahead, but then we like correct what they do. We're like, yeah, they're off. Let us fix it a bit.
And what I love about the way that the LA film critics act, it's very much like the nominating of a new pope, because as a new category is announced, it's like put out as like a press break. It's not like we don't get them all at once. It's like one at a time. And I feel like there are a bunch of film critics in a room arguing over what is good and what is bad. And I love that idea.
Your mental picture is exactly right. It was like 7.5 hours in a room this year.
Wow.
Of critics arguing after every category is announced. The president usually says, reminds everyone again, don't tweet. Let us be the first tweet. Let us be the first tweet. When there was a piano this year in the room, so he hit a chord when it was safe for people to like chime in and say what it was.
Wow.
No, it's great. We sort of love how people get annoyed at us. There's an Oscar blogger in particular who every time we take a break for lunch is just raging about it. How dare they take a break?
Seven and a half hours. Well, for those of you who did not follow up on it, can you tell us what you picked? Or communally picked as the best film of the year?
Yeah. I mean, what I picked and what we communally picked doesn't really overlap, has been the case for me and Lafka pretty much all the time. I really was like stamping my foot down in my own private little way for Saltburn over and over again for a lot of stuff that I felt like didn't get recognized and I really wanted it to. You know, Saltburn is the new movie from Emerald Fennell, and it's like erotic and weird and twisty and all about class. And I think Rosamund Pike gives the best supporting performance of the year. She's hilarious. She's funny. She's playing this like wealthy scion, dowageress, rich woman wandering around this gigantic estate. And everything she says is so fatuous that she's just hysterical. She's absolutely just a riot. And I really, if you have not seen Saltburn yet, oh, you're in for a treat just every time she shows up.
You've been like an Emerald Fennell booster. I remember you were so into, you were telling me about Promising Young Woman like months and months before it came out.
I'm
so excited about
it. Yeah. I remember that too.
Yeah.
We actually have that interview on Unspooled. You can listen to Amy's interview with Emerald Fennell for that movie. It's a great interview.
Yeah. I mean, she's just wonderful. Like, I think kind of the beat on a lot of her movies like this and Promising Young Woman is like, she talks about horrible things that are happening in culture, you know, like abuse and class inequality. And then people are like frustrated that she doesn't solve them at the end. But I like that she never solves problems. She's just like, this is how terrible it is. I'm not going to lie to you and say that there is a solution. Like, honestly, like, here's a way of going about creating justice in the world. Might not work out, but let's go on this ride. Let's explore it. Like, I think she's having fun in a way that like old school satirical filmmakers like The Magic Christian used to do and stuff like that, or like Louis Buñuel. She's just like having such fun showing you everything that's terrible. And I'm into that because I don't believe a lot of stuff can be solved. So it suits me just fine.
I just want to call out a movie that I believe I talked about on this show, but I will say it again because you mentioned Rosamund Pike. I still love that movie that she did a couple of years ago called I Care a Lot. It was like a Netflix movie about a woman who like scams old people's insurance money. It's a dark, weird movie that I feel like some people hated because it had no lightness to it. There was, again, a no real comeuppance of an awful character. But I loved it. It's great. And I'm a fan of her, and I've grown to be a fan of her more and more as time has gone on. But what won, Amy?
We had a couple winners that just really kept popping up over and over again. One of them is Poor Things, which is, I cannot wait for people to see it. It's the new movie, of course, by Yorgos Lanthimos with
Emma
Stone.
I was just about to ask you about this, too, because this is one of the other directors we've shared as one as being huge fans of, is all of Yorgos' stuff.
I am a huge fan of him.
And I just saw Poor Things last weekend, and I was really blown away.
You saw it, too? Oh, God, yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
It's so fun. Too. I don't want to spoil too much about it for people who haven't seen it yet, and I do feel like when we do an Oscar show later, we will be talking about it. But just to try to sell it on people, our vice president of LAFCA, the wonderful Katie Walsh, started nicknaming it Horny Barbie. And I feel like Horny Barbie really works. Horny Barbie meets Frankenstein. Horny Barbie meets Frankenstein is a great movie. I'll just pitch that now.
Sign me up. That sounds like a movie I would like to see.
Horny Barbie is almost an understatement. It's pretty crazy.
And by the way, if you're not familiar with Yorgos, we talked about him on the show when we talked about Dogtooth, but also made The Favorite, The Lobster, and Killing of the Sacred Deer. I will say I knew nothing about Killing of a Sacred Deer. I saw it in Toronto on the night of its premiere. And to be in a theater packed like that with everyone not knowing what to expect was truly in my like top five best movie theater experiences ever, because he creates this like thriller atmosphere, like this repulsion, this like it's every emotion. I love seeing his films in a theater. They are meant to be seen with a lot of people, in my opinion.
Oh, I think we might have been at the same screening, but we didn't know each other that well.
Oh, yeah, right, because that's like 2017.
Oh, it's like crossing paths.
Wow.
Oh, way back in the day. Our other big winner, and I'll just sort of tease this too because it's coming out right now, because LAFCA, we're sort of known for really promoting international cinema, for promoting kind of like underdog things. Like I think our wedge is not so much being like, hey, go see the new Scorsese, but like, have you seen this amazing movie from Mexico? Have you seen like this amazing movie from like Wales? And so this year, one of the movies we were really, really, really pushing is Jonathan Glazer's The Zone of Interest, which I think is definitely going to stick with people when they see it. Like, this is a movie that everybody was like, you have to see this large, you have to see it big, because the sound and the music, I'm saying this now to like our podcast guys, and I'm watching Devin get goosebumps. Like, the sound and the music is amazing. It's all about sound and music. In one sentence, the story of it is basically you're at the home of a commander of Auschwitz who lives like on the other side of the wall from the camp. And you spend all of your time on the side of the wall with like his wife making cookies, pouring schnapps, getting the kids to school, and like just having the normal frets about, is everybody in our family happy? How are we all doing? Does my mother like my garden? And then over the wall, you hear things that she just ignores. And so it is super chilling. And the German actress Sandra Hüller is the star of it. She's kind of everybody's like favorite international actress darling right now. She's in two big movies this year. She'll probably get a nomination for one of them. And yeah. So that was like our other major flag carrier.
The probably my favorite score of the last 10 years was Mika Levy's score for Under the Skin, which is so skin crawling. So you telling me this is a movie all about score, I'm ready.
Well, and not just the score in Under the Skin, the sound design.
Yeah, everything about
the sound design is so next level in that movie.
Oh,
that movie,
here you go.
Truly, truly like affected me. There's a handful of movies that like you can think back on that really just affects you in a way. And Under the Skin is that for me. I also love Sexy Beast. And he
Sexy
was
Beast
one
is
of
so good.
So good. And one of the first DVDs I bought was a Jonathan Glazer collection of music videos. They had like one for Spike
Jones.
Oh, the
director series?
The director series. And they were just great. Like, he made amazing music videos that are weird and just really interesting stuff. But so that's I'm excited about that. Josh, you feel like you and Amy have been able to go see and do more than me. So what are you liking? What did you see this year that you want to call attention to?
I mean, the interesting thing is my read on 2023 is that this has been a year where if you just look at like the blockbusters, like the big hyped movies, like outside of Barbie and Oppenheimer, which was this just like crazy cultural event, like they were almost all kind of flops and failures. It felt like just a lot of like the big franchises kind of falling apart and disappointing. But then when you look below that level, it almost seems like a better movie of the year than usual. There have been so many things that I either got to see and loved or have been really hyped to see that I'm waiting to catch up with over the holidays. I know we're going to do a much bigger like 2023 breakdown when it gets closer to the Oscars. But I have been thinking about it. I think my top two of this year are probably on totally opposite poles. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse and Killers of the Flower Moon.
Spider-Man.
Both of which I saw with you, Josh.
Both of which I saw with you. And yeah, absolutely. And they ended up being my top two.
Those were amazing experiences in the theater and fantastic movies, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if Spider-Verse is arguably half a movie, it's the best half a movie I saw this year.
Seriously.
But, you know, I think they did a really good job in that film of giving you some sort of conclusion. Mm-hmm. The same way that I think that they do in the Back to the Future movies, like there is more to be told, but I feel like, and maybe that's one of the notes that I would give it, is I think that they tried so hard to make sure they had an ending. So it didn't just feel like a to be continued. Like, and
it definitely felt like all the main characters got like arcs that ended in satisfying places.
That's right.
Yes.
Part. That's right.
And so I do believe that like in that way, there was something where I feel like they really tried not to give you half a movie. And that's always so hard because I feel like people, you know, it's like, well, did I see something? But I really do believe they created one film and then the story will continue. But I think the arcs are, like you said, clean.
And definitely just no prettier movie this year, I think, just in terms of pure eye candy, like every single frame.
I bought that book. I have an art book of just that. And I feel like, you know, I feel like that's the thing that I love about that film is it's done by a lot of like artists. We were talking about this when we were talking about Edward Scissorhands, like who is a director who's an artist and a director who is considered an artist because they make great film. And I feel that there's a subtle difference there. Like, and I feel like the pictures, the way that they are so detailed, like this, the Coons dog in the museum in Spider-Man, like all that kind of stuff, all those little details.
And like Gwen's really, world being all watercolors.
Yeah.
So gorgeous. Oh, so beautiful. Gorgeous.
I mean, to me, it also is a giant, like, fuck you to Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, which I like, but it was like, oh, no, this is how you do a multiverse. Like, this is what it looks like. And
before going to see that movie, I was so over multiverse stuff. I felt like I completely milked it. And then it was like, oh, no, this is like the best version of this concept.
Yeah.
Right. It's like you have to tell it in a way that actually makes us want to explore the multiverses, right?
That's right.
Yes.
And that's what this one did to me.
That's right.
All right, so now, Jess, I know you already said that Spider-Man was your favorite.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to talk a little bit about that, or is there anything else that jumps to your mind as well?
Honestly, this year was kind of whack.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
None of us can agree on whether this was a good year or not.
That's true.
Right?
That's interesting.
I mean, just kind of piggybacking on what Josh said, I was like, I would go and I would watch something, or I'd go with a group of friends and we'd get hyped. Look, guys, look. Hot take. I went to go watch the new The Boy and the Heron like a week ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I was like, what is going on here?
I've heard this from a lot of people. People were like, this seems a lot weirder and more confusing than the typical like Miyazaki film.
Yeah.
Wait. Did you and your friends come out of it being like, that new Miyazaki was whack? Because I wish I could have been there. That sounds amazing.
No. I was the only one that came out. First of all, I was the only one that came out being like, this is whack. Everyone else is like, oh, you know, he's just, there's a story there. It's about his past. There's a lot of, you know, they can find more meaning. I'm just like, look, this feels like improv. They went from one thing to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. I'm not a loyalist, okay, to Miyazaki. So there's that. I think outside of Spider-Man and maybe like TMNT, like everything else just felt, I don't know. Like, I feel like Mr. Horror Hollywood came in really hot this year, and that was kind of cool. So, like, Evil Dead Rise, maybe?
Yeah, Evil Dead Rise was awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, but outside of that, like, it wasn't hidden this year for me.
Did you see Talk to Me? The one about like the creepy hand?
Yes, I saw that.
Love to Talk to Me.
Oof. That was a great horror movie this year too. I really dug
that one.
Talk
to Me also, yes. That's on the list for this year.
That's a good one.
I'm so kind of torn on this year because I think what happened is some films that you wouldn't think would get some attention did because of the way that everything had kind of been dealt. Like the way that COVID caught up or you know, the movie theaters were in a weird flux. So certain things got some more attention, other things got some less attention. And there's a lot of movies I like. The one that I want to like call out because I think it is really fun and different. And I've talked about it on the show, so I won't go too detailed about it, but I really loved Dungeons & Dragons. And I love Dungeons & Dragons because it's not a franchise or a world that I am at all connected to. I don't know that world. I don't go in there knowing like any inside jokes. I just was excited to see an ensemble, big budget comedy. It reminded me of what I love about Ghostbusters. And I think a lot of people are like, we need another Ghostbusters. And I'm one of those people. But you never get a chance to see that. I don't know if we'll get a chance to see it again, but it was really well reviewed. It was really big. It was really fun. And I feel like, you know, we don't often talk about these big movies. Like I want to talk about May, December until the cows come home. But yeah, also, I also want to appreciate.
We can do that literally the next half hour. Just
I know. I can't wait to talk about May, December.
It's great. And I feel like that to me is like, I appreciate that. I also just appreciate some cool things that I was surprised at, like Bottoms really got me in a way.
Loved.
I was like, oh, Bottoms, so fun, more of that. The same way I felt about even Joyride. I was like, oh, this is cool. I haven't seen something like this. There's just these movies, even Dix the Musical, like, and I'm putting them.
Dix was so fun.
I'm just kind of putting them all together in this like little bit of a pot because they're not the ones that are the biggest hits. You know, they're not the ones that I think everyone's going to be talking about, but I think that there were some cool things that were just made this year. Like we let, to me, and I know I'm talking about Dungeons and Dragons, which is a big movie, but let these like kind of smaller movies pop. Like No Hard Feelings, I thought was very funny too with Jennifer Lawrence. It's like, I'm excited to see movies released that I used to see when I was younger. It's like, oh yeah, you can release a comedy in the theaters. You can release an interesting movie. It doesn't have to be like a giant, big story. Like it doesn't have to be part of a universe. It doesn't have to be part of the. So I just want to applaud that. I feel like there was a lot of fun little nuggets here. Not perfect movies, not the best movies ever, but like, whoa, I had a great time going to the theater and seeing that.
Well,
and I'm gonna,
you know what this year kind of felt to me like on the whole, and I hope this analogy makes sense and this isn't too much of like a film critic analogy. This year, on the whole, felt to me the way that the Sundance Film Festival used to feel when it was like really firing up, where it was like there were tons of like first time and second time films, filmmakers making stuff that I thought was really, really good. And I think their third film, their film after this is going to absolutely explode. You know, it felt like discovering a lot of people who are like about to majorly pop in talent. Movies
love
like
that.
There was. Right? Yeah. Like, they cloned Tyrone on Netflix. I don't know.
Oh,
did y'all see that one?
Yes.
Where you're like, oh, this guy's going to do some good shit. Or, like, Fair Play. Like, also another great movie that I think was on Netflix. A fantastic sexual thriller that was so just mean and nasty. Like, Alden Ehrenreich is in it. And also this actress, Phoebe Dynevor. She's amazing. And it was like, I just feel this talent kind of bubbling up everywhere. And that's what made me excited about this year. In dream scenario.
It's a little bit like the collapse of like the Marvel machine and some of these big franchise finally. It's almost like giving some of these movies like a little bit more air and attention that they would have gotten otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no money oxygen, but maybe there's attention.
Right. There's
oxygen.
No money in oxygen. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to also just shout out this one other film, which you'll probably all laugh at me that I'm talking about, but I really like this movie, Missing. Missing is...
saw Missing. I reviewed Missing.
Oh, did you? Did you hate it or did you like it?
I was mixed, but I want to hear you talk about Missing. There are parts of Missing I thought were really fun.
So Missing is a story about this young girl whose mother goes missing. And it's all told through her computer screen. So you are following the entire story through IMs and WhatsApp and Google Maps. And it was really, I felt incredibly compelling. And here's what I'm going to say. Again, not the best movie of the year, but I was like, wow, what an interesting, cool way to tell the story. It's a kind of a semi-sequel to the John Cho film that came out a couple years before.
That's what I was going to say, because I saw that one. Yeah.
And it was done by the same team, but cool. Different directors. And so this one was, I watched a John Cho film right after that. I like Missing more. Because I think that they just figured out a way to make...
That.
Yeah, they just found a way to make it... Look, it is a very run-of-the-mill thriller movie. It's like, it's mystery thriller, like very basic. But I would watch Missing 3 times over watching that Kenneth Branagh Death in Venice. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, at least they're trying for something, right? Mm-hmm. And I found myself engaged. I was like, that was pretty good. And it does have like a solid rating on, you know, it's got like an 88% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 7.1% on IMDb. There's something also about like this idea to me where it's like, well, this is how people are experiencing things. Second screen, like, can you make a second screen movie that is actually compelling?
It's kind of a little subgenre.
Yeah.
There's two, Unfriended and Unfriended Dark Web, and Host.
Oh, yeah.
All three of those are fantastic.
Yeah. It's not exactly that, but I kind of put Skinamarink in this category of like, it feels like a movie that couldn't exist except for this like second screen world of like, you're like, it feels like it's from like the perspective of like a webcam of like a demon or something.
Interesting.
I don't know.
I like it. I'm like, I'm down to try it. And I feel like, you know what I liked about that movie too, it wasn't a horror, but they made it really exciting. And it, you know, it's like a great, like sometimes I just want to watch a Hallmark Christmas movie. And sometimes I want to watch like a really good, like mystery thriller, like just let me get in the thing and I'm ready to go.
I will say this, throwing my hat in the ring again as a spooky girl.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving was so fun in the movie theater.
Whoa. Okay. Amy, okay. I know Amy's going to disagree with you here.
I know. It was
I'll agree that it was fun in the theater. How's that? I'll agree that it was fun in the theater.
That's a lovely compromise.
I said what I said. It was fun in the theater. But if we're just going back to just like plain different delivery, having fun, mm-hmm. making something. It doesn't have to, who cares if it's Patrick Dempsey? Who cares? Like, it was just a good time. Me and my boyfriend went in, we walked out, we're like, all right, that was fun. Let's go get dinner. And it was just cool. Fun. Yeah. Like, that's it.
I mean, if we're like celebrating the stuff that is not going to get Oscar noms, which I kind of feel like we're doing, which is the lane I love. There's like two things I really also just have to shout out then that are just fun. The first one is Theater Camp. Did you see Theater Camp?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was just this great comedy about just theater camp geeks, just like the absolute geek of the geeks, taking theater camp so seriously, singing little songs. It starred that guy, from the movie about the guy who pretends that he broke his arm or died or something.
Yes,
oh,
yes. Dear Evan Hansen.
Yes. Dear Evan Hansen. Sorry, completely blanked on that. Shout out to my best friend Eva, who was like a pitch perfect Dear Evan Hansen for Halloween one year.
Oh, terrifying. Yes. I remember those pictures.
Terrifyingly good.
So
terrifyingly good. He's in this, and I didn't know that. I thought he was hilarious, and now I'm like completely on board. Uh-huh. I think he's so funny in this. And then there's this movie, Biosphere. This is like another debut.
Oh, this
film.
Is this the Mark Duplass movie?
Yeah, it's like a two character thing. It's Mark Duplass and Sterling K. Brown. Sterling K. Brown, one of our greatest actors working today, and they just play two guys in a biosphere at the end of the world. One of them is the former president of America. The other one is like his advisor and best friend. And when I tell you that this movie goes places you are not expecting, holy shit. This is just a movie that I was like watching with my jaw open. Don't want to say anything about it.
But that sounds awesome.
I want to watch it so bad.
Sterling K. Brown does stuff in this that you're just like, he invents emotions on screen that have never been had to be portrayed by anybody before. That's what I'll say.
Oh, yeah.
That is quite a sales pitch, Amy.
I've heard a lot of people talk about it in a very positive way. So
wait. I have my one 2023 that I want to shout out, and I'm fascinated that no one has said it. I'm so I don't know why I even worried. I was like, what if someone takes mine? No one's ever going to take mine. I'm so weird. Anyway, the movie maybe wouldn't say it was my favorite film of the year, but a movie I cannot stop thinking about is Polite Society.
I was just about to say that. Oh my God, I'm so glad you said it. Yes. I was just sitting here being like, wait, why didn't I say Polite Society?
Why didn't I say exactly. Polite Society, directed by Nita Mansour. That movie blew my mind. It was so fun. It was so funny. I don't even know quite how to describe it other than to say it's
you know, it's a little bit Scott Pilgrim, and it's a little bit kind of I don't even know what. It's like it's a there's romance to it. There's action. There's adventure. There's like there's the best like wow. kind of martial arts stuff I've seen outside of like a Sammo Hung movie in there, where I'm just like, this is hitting every single level that I want a movie to hit.
I didn't even hear about this movie.
Entertained me top to bottom. Fantastic movie. Like, couldn't recommend it enough.
I am with you. It is fantastic. And if you watch Polite Society, you're like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. You have to watch Nita Manzor's TV show. I think you can stream it. It was like Hulu or Peacock or something like that.
Yes. It's on Max. We Are Lady Parts.
We Are Lady Parts. Oh, it's about like a girl punk band.
She was the writer director of that show, and this is her first feature. So it's
I'm all in.
And she directed a couple great episodes of Doctor Who as well. You know, I'm a huge Doctor Who fan, so I've been kind of like aware of her for a minute. And so when this came out, I was like, "Well, I got to go see this," and blew my mind. Fantastic. Oh,
and can I shout out another person who I feel weird being like, this is an underdog, up and coming young actor, because she's like Bono's daughter, which I didn't realize when I saw this movie for the first time. But there's a movie out called Flora and Son. It's the new, like, it's the new Carney film, you know, who does all of the musicals. Mm-hmm. And it's, she plays this kind of like rough and tumble single mom who, you know, starts taking guitar lessons just because. Huh. You know, and it's kind of just about the creation of music. Like, she's not a person that you're like, oh, she's definitely going to become a pop star. But she is just so raw and so funny and really raunchy and really surprising. And I watched this whole movie and I was like, I need everybody to know about this actress. Oh my God, what a young talent. And then you're like a little bit bummed that she's the daughter of the most famous musician in the world. Right. But like, my God, she definitely stands on her own feet in a way where like when I had to write about this movie, I didn't even mention who her dad was because I was like, people just need to put some respect on her name as is. That's she's cool. phenomenal.
Well, I love this. And I feel like we're amazing people. We love great movies, but we have some friends who decided to call in. We asked them to call in to give us what they thought, and now we will critique their picks without them being here. The best way to do it. So let's see what we got here.
So, and some of these picks are probably movies you've talked about a little bit already, and some are completely not.
Hi, Paul and Amy. I'm Nicole Byer from the show Best Friends, and my favorite film of 2023 was my absolute favorite. It was Fast X. Why did I love it? Because it was a continuation of a magical franchise that has defied the laws of physics and storytelling. A standout performance or a scene, Jason Momoa. The whole movie was incredible. A man with nail polish, muscles, and gauchos? Sign me the fuck up. Also, there's this wonderful scene in the movie where he's talking to people who may or may not be alive, and I said, tee-hee-hee. And that's the aspect of the movie that I can't stop thinking about. It was so good. And also, Vin Diesel uses his car as a weapon in this movie, and it's just incredible. Also, it ties back to another movie in the franchise, which is arguably one of the best ones, and I thought that was such a smart move. Who would I recommend this movie to? Anybody who likes fun and not losers. I would never recommend that movie to a loser.
By the way, thank you, Nicole. And she's 100% right. This is a movie that made me stand up in the theater. It made June stand up in the theater. Like, this is a movie that demanded attention. In a year where franchises failed, this movie did not. I mean, and the fact that no one's talking about Jason Momoa for Best Supporting Actor is mind-boggling. What he's doing there is some brilliant work. I love that franchise. I've spent many an hour talking about Fast and Furious, so you don't have to hear me talk about it here. But I will say this. They did not let me down. And I'm sorry that I did forget about it, but I'm glad to remember how great it actually is.
I will say one of my favorite quotes from that movie is when Charlize Theron and what's her name? Michelle Rodriguez are about to fight.
Yeah.
And Michelle Rodriguez looks at Charlize Theron and goes, game recognize game. And I was like, it's about to go down.
I mean, talk about a cliffhanger. I mean, you know, we're talking about Spider-Verse. I mean, that movie literally ends on a giant cliffhanger. And based on the budget and the amount of money it made, we may never see the end of that cliffhanger. This movie did not do as well as people thought it was going to do.
No.
So we may be seeing a much more pared-down Fast.
There really were a string of those, weren't there, this year?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, not to get into whatever, but, like, Dial of Destiny, like, insane. Mm-hmm. Like, Paul, you, I mean, all of us, you know, us of a similar age, right? In a similar range. It's like the idea that an Indiana Jones movie would tank is just like, it doesn't compute. It's so strange.
I mean, it's so bizarre. And I would also argue that Mission Impossible kind of tanked. And that's a franchise that I love. And, but I also think it suffered from two things. One, which was like, up against the juggernaut that no one knew was going to be such a juggernaut, Barbie and Oppenheimer.
Right. It should have been an August release. They should have just pushed it a
Christmas,
couple months.
Christmas release.
Yeah.
But also it has the cliffhanger ending. We're talking about a lot of movies that end on this, like, it's already a 3-hour movie and I'm not leaving fulfilled. And I think it's hard to talk about a movie like that and feel like, oh, I loved it, because you are somehow leaving something on the table, I think, on some level. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, say what you will about Barbie and Oppenheimer. Those are movies that end. They end with a bang. They definitely end.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, I thought Oppenheimer had a sequel coming. What?
It's called The Life That We're Living In. Yeah.
I will say that I was watching Oppenheimer, and I saw it much later than everybody else, and I was just loving it. And it occurred to me, like, I was like, oh, I haven't even gotten to the one thing about this movie that I know, which is the atom bomb.
Right.
Like, that doesn't happen until over 2 hours
five, something like that. Yeah.
And I found that to be really interesting that movie could carry you there. So I found that to be really, really fantastic.
I can't believe this conversation started with Fast X and wound up at Oppenheimer. What?
All right, let's go to our next clip.
Hi, Paul and Amy. I'm Sashir Zameda from Best Friends with Nicole Byer and Sashir Zameda. And my favorite film of 2023 is Quiz Lady. I really loved it. I thought it was very funny. I thought it was very sweet. I thought Awkwafina and Sandra Oh both did an incredible job in their performance. And I honestly was surprised by how many tearjerker moments in there. There was a moment where Will Ferrell was in there talking about bow ties, and I got real teary-eyed. It was embarrassing, but also very sweet. And I would recommend this movie to anyone with mom issues.
I did not see Quiz Lady, and I've heard so many great things. It's written by my friend Jen D'Angelo, who is an amazingly brilliant writer. Did anyone else get to check it out?
No, I'm putting it on my list absolutely right now, because that's a great recommendation.
Yeah, I'm adding it to my watch list right now.
I have the mom issues, so I will be watching.
Yeah, exactly. That's right up my alley.
I can't say that or deny it, because I think my mom might listen to this podcast sometimes. Hi, everybody. Hi, Mom.
Amy, I think you're going to appreciate this next endorsement.
Hi, Paul and Amy. It's Mono from Too Spooky to Handle, a subsidiary of Earwolf Presents. I gotta tell ya, my favorite film of 2023 was Dix the Musical. Hands down, no contest, best movie ever made. It's the return of grand high stupidity. The performance, every single performance turned in is a comedy revelation. Most notably, is the Sewer Boys. Sewer Boys are new queer canon. Thank God we have them. We need them. And they're the thirst traps we deserve. Where do I want to start? I don't want to give too much away, but I'll just say the moment that sticks out to me is Flying Vulva. Everyone should watch this except people who are scared to have their brains challenged. There might be some things you don't want to watch with your family. So if you like to laugh, if you think absurdity is hot, go watch Dix the Musical. Okay, bye.
Wow.
I am not going to lie. Dix the Musical was my number one vote this year for LAFCA for music and score. This is probably why I'll wind up getting kicked out someday. But I have never, ever, ever appreciated a lyrical turn as much as I have appreciated the ones in Dick the Musical. My God, it is masterful.
Well, you know, this is a movie that was based on a show that started at UCB. It's directed by Larry Charles, who I think has a history of making very in-your-face films. You know, whether it's like Sacha Baron Cohen or Bill Maher, like, he's not afraid of going there. And this movie is so wonderful and absurd, and it feels to me, and I don't want to be putting it in a corner, but it feels to me like the energy of a Tim and Eric or Eric Andre show, very like Adult Swim, kind of funny, big, weird. And I just feel like we don't get that kind of stuff anymore. I like a big, giant, absurd film. Like, and that's A24, and I love that they do that.
That's kind of what I felt about Bottoms. The thing I liked so much about it is that Bottoms was really funny, but it had that like undercurrent of surrealism. Like things weren't quite real in Bottoms. Like they've got that little bit where the football player is like in a cage in the background.
Yes.
Of the scenes. And I just thought that's such a funny, they don't call any attention to it. It's just, we have to keep the linebackers in a cage in the high school. I just loved little elements like that throughout Bottoms. It's so good.
No, and the football player in Bottoms, Nicholas Galantine, I just have to shout out this guy because he was in one of my other favorite guilty pleasure movies this year, Red, White, and Royal Blue. Did you guys see Red, White, and Royal Blue? It's like a romance between like the son of the president and the son of the British prime minister.
Right.
And he's the son of the British prime minister. And like, talk about a thirst trap. That's like the thirstiest of all thirst traps I've ever seen is like these two guys just being like, hello, let's solve international relations together. But love like, it. He's so funny. He's an actor that was like not on my radar at all until this year. And I'm like, yes, 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 yes.
All right, let's go to our next clip.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Amy. This is Oscar Montoya from the Trigaze podcast. And listen, 2023 was a year for movies. And at the top of my list for this year is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem. It is so awesome. It's so cool. I love that actual teenagers voice the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for the first time, maybe ever. Iconic. Also, I love how each person was animated, each human, to look kind of like ugly in a weird way, but very, very cool. I also loved Michelangelo's whole storyline of wanting to be in an improv team. Relatable, achievable, baby Michelangelo, I'm rooting for you. Yes, and all the way to the top. So yeah, that was my pick for the best movie of the year. Bye.
I got to watch this movie finally like 2 weeks ago. Really, really, really fun. Incredible animation. And also, like, I cannot, like you mentioned, I cannot believe it took this long to actually have teenagers voice the roles. It changes the tone of it so drastically. You realize going back to these, like, all the old ones, it's like, oh, these are just full-grown men. Where the teenage doesn't, like, factor into it at all. And finally, it's something that focuses on the teen aspect of it. And it really clicked for me.
It really clicked for me, too. And they are, absolutely some of the coolest animation. Like, it's just having fun with what animation is. I'm so glad that I feel like we're finally, probably thanks to Spider-Verse, breaking away from, like, oh, let's show every single lock of hair. And, oh, this is the best thing an animation can do is just duplicate reality, blah, 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 blah. Like, it is fun and wild and expressive. It gets things out of you that, like, normal images can't do.
Well, I kind of look at Turtles as like a companion piece to Spider-Verse, which is like, and that goes to like Mitchell's and the Machine. Like there is a new kind of style coming out that's so much more dynamic. And I think in a weird way, you can see that the reaction to a movie like Wish is, oh, it feels a little bit of the past. And I think like animation's moving in a really cool direction right now. And it's feeling, I think, more alive than ever. And it's really cool to see. And I have nothing negative to say about Wish more than it's just there's like a real dividing line. It used to be like, well, Pixar and animation. And now it's this other thing, which it feels to me way more alive. I can't wait to see what we get from this.
They're like drawing out of the lines. Like, physically, and it's amazing.
It's so cool. Yeah.
You're right. And drawing out of lines is like the perfect metaphor. Like they're, I feel like Pixar really wound up putting itself in its own little box. Like, these are the four emotions you're supposed to feel in a Pixar movie. And, like, animation is breaking out. I mean, it feels like the DNA of Looney Tunes is, like, in the new cartoons, right? Or something like that. Like, a wilder, crazier type of animation.
More anarchic.
Yeah, exactly. Willing to be a little stretchy.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, you know, Amy and I got a chance to see Coyote versus Acme, or Acme versus Coyote. I forget which order it is.
Oh, boy.
And it is great. And it's so fun and alive. And it feels to me like the first, like, true Looney Tunes movie. Like, and I say that in the sense that Looney Tunes has such a specific style. And, you know, I don't think Space Jam 1 or 2 or Looney Tunes Back in Action have ever captured what that style is.
They definitely haven't.
And this movie definitely captures that style. It's fun. It's weird. It's a Roger Rabbit movie that hopefully people will get to see. From apparently a Deadline article, which I'm told is 90% true, that movie is going to be coming out soon.
Yeah.
We're
nice.
Oh, yeah. That's so good. And I know we're not going to turn this into the May December podcast because we're going to hold off. But how wild that Sammy Birch, her first produced screenplay is May December. Her second is going to be Coyote Acme. That is a range. She is like instantly so cool. At the top of like my screenwriters. I'll see whatever they do.
Same.
I'm all on board with that.
All right. Next clip.
Hi, Paul and Amy. This is Kimia Bepornia, and I'm excited to announce that my favorite movie of the year was Polite Society. Yeah, Polite Society. Hey. I think it came out at the beginning of the year. I just loved it so much because I grew up watching these, like, kung fu movies with Jackie Chan or, like, all the James Bond movies. I watched those with my dad. And this movie had amazing fun fight scenes, but in the campy way where, like, everyone will fight and destroy a whole set and then two scenes later everything is cleaned up and the fight didn't matter. It was stylistically super awesome, and it was amazing to see, like, a movie with that kind of fighting and choreo and stuff starring women. You know, it's just a raucous good time. Also, I laughed from the beginning to the end. It's that kind of silly stupid humor, but it had a lot of heart. So I honestly think that everyone should watch Polite Society. I think, who would I recommend it to? It really does feel like it's a movie for all, so I recommend to all.
I like it to all.
To all.
I couldn't have said it any better. In fact, I failed to say it better myself earlier. That's exactly it. There it is.
I love that. All right. Well, now I'm really, I'm all in on this movie. I cannot wait.
Me too. This has been on my list and I haven't gotten a chance to see it yet. So it's moving towards the top of my list.
Amazon Prime for free. There it is.
Hey.
That's right. Wow. Okay. All right.
Hey, Paul and Amy. This is Chelsea Devantes from the Glamorous Trash podcast, where we recap and book club celebrity memoirs. And one of my favorite films from 2023 was the film Blackberry, directed by Matthew Johnson. And I have to tell you, I am shook that this was one of my favorite films. I can't believe I felt this way. I didn't even really know it was the story of Blackberry going into it because I thought to myself, they wouldn't make a whole film just about the Blackberry phone. And they did. And one of the reasons I love it is because it really showcased great storytelling and great comedy and how far that can go. And it's a low budget. The film was made for about under $5 million. The director is Matthew Johnson. He's also in the film and he's really funny in it. The performances are so grounded and it made me hope that studios and financiers going forward can see that, like, when you have great storytelling, when you have really grounded comedy, you don't need this big blowout production to make a phenomenal film. And I think a story like Blackberry would be classically shot as like this big, I don't know, this big Wolf of Wall Street, like the tale of Blackberry. And I think a lot of films have really gone wrong. I won't name names, but a lot of big brands, when they do sort of the big story of this film, you know what? I'll say one. Tetris, you know, that really could have been a great story. And it just gets blown up into this giant action movie and they lose the story. And so I loved that it was low budget. It doesn't feel like it at all. It's shot beautifully. And I think it made them focus on the storytelling. And now I'm really hopeful going forward to next year and the years after that, that we can have some more films like Blackberry that also have some women in it. You know, just a woman character or two. It's all I'm asking. I would recommend this movie to literally everyone. It's such a surprise. And also the story of Blackberry, shockingly interesting.
Okay. So this is interesting because I've heard so many people talk about this film. I have not seen it. But the one thing that people come away from this film talking about is Glenn Howerton. People love
Glenn Howerton. Yeah. He got some love in our LAFCA vote for supporting, for sure.
I did get to see this one. It's for sure. I didn't see all of them. I think it's definitely the best of kind of the crop that showed up this year of like movies about products.
Why were there so many of them?
We've had movies about games.
There was Air and Tetris.
Because capitalists are our heroes.
Yeah. Candy Cane Lane.
This is the one that, right. Yeah, this one felt like it felt like the best way in. Air was another one I saw that it was like, this kind of just feels like you're reading from like the Wikipedia page about Air Jordans to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only good part about Air was like, when they showed, I think it was like a payphone in the movie, the guy next to me like leaned over to his friends like, that's a payphone. Like, what's happening? And then they showed the shoe and he like exhaled like he had just seen the Mona Lisa.
Oh.
Yeah. But no, Glenn Howerton in this, he's so fun. He's like the embodiment of just like balding rage. right? Just like screaming, yelling, wandering into things, being like the most intimidating man on earth. It's just a fantastic performance for him.
Well, I'm excited. Again, these are movies that they're all were these little smaller films that got a little burst. And this is the problem with streaming, I think, too, is like you get about a week to watch it. And then if you don't, there's another one that replaces it. And then you just keep on moving on. And this is a good reminder to kind of check these out as we get into a season where every week now we're going to be talking about a brand new movie until Oscars.
Yeah. It's true. Wait, I want to do an informal poll at this Christmas party of ours. Who else here had a BlackBerry?
Oh, I did.
I did.
I never had a BlackBerry. Flip phone. Oh.
My sister had one and I was jealous. And but no, I just went straight to iPhone.
Guys, I had a Sidekick.
Ooh.
That's cool.
Whatcha? We're all impressed.
I also had a Sidekick, and a majority of my beginning romantic relationship with my wife was done on my Sidekick because I had more text messages I could send on that, and it was way easier to type longer messages because I was rocking a T9 world. Yeah,
you wooed her on Sidekick.
Oh God, I was so good at T9. I miss it. I was so fast.
I know T9.
Hi, Paul and Amy. It's Lisa Gilroy, your friend, your fan. 2023, what a year. I have to do my doodilly right off the bat and say Barbie movie was my favorite movie, but my favorite holiday movie was The Holdovers. Ooh, Paul Giamatti is so good in this movie. He plays like crusty old, dusty old, curmudgeon-y, lazy-eyed, teenage-hating Ninja Turtle. No, not a Ninja Turtle, but teenage-hating professor at this boarding school. And he has to supervise the kids that aren't going home for Christmas. And of course, his heart's going to melt a little bit throughout the course of the film, okay? The Christmas spirit gets a hold of this grumpy guy. And it's the sweetest, coziest movie I've seen in a long time. It's shot on film. It's set in the 70s. Everybody's wearing chunky knit turtlenecks. The music is so good. It's so snowy. It's just, oh, it's a gorgeous movie. Couldn't recommend it more. Family friendly. Cozier than slurping down a bucket of hot chalk, okay? You're gonna love it.
I mean, she is not wrong. I wanted to move into this movie. Because, yes, I am obsessed and I only wear 1970s polyester pants that I get on eBay. That's part of my, like, sickness. So I definitely wanted to move into this movie and steal everybody's closets, rifle through all of their clothes, steal all the socks. It's just people sitting around smoking indoors on terrible couches and drinking bourbon and yelling at children. I mean, that's perfect. That's my heaven.
It kind of is your heaven, isn't it?
Wow.
Oh, I think you'll love this. And Divine Joy Randolph, she's one of my like absolute favorite actors right now. She did get our supporting performance award for this. She's fantastic in it. She has a really great, big, pivotal part in this movie.
Well, I can't wait. Again, wow, I feel really, I feel like I didn't see anything. I mean, I'm watching so many movies for this show.
Right, yeah.
All right. All right, what else do we got?
Hi, Paul and Amy. I'm Roman Mars, host of the podcast 99% Invisible. And my favorite film of 2023 was Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
There we go.
I went to the theater that night in a very bad mood, and it totally turned me around. The sheer artistry on display in every frame, every second on the screen was almost overwhelming. And I just loved looking at it. I've never watched a lot of animated movies when I was a kid, and because of that, I'm never really emotionally connected to them for some reason. There's just kind of a barrier there. I'm broken in some way, but I can't explain. but Spider-Man was so masterful that it just overcame all of that. It had great acting, exciting story. I was just in it from beginning to end, and I was just buzzing when I left the theater. It was so good.
I want to talk to you about that because, you know, we talked about Spider-Man a little bit. But this idea, too, that, like, it's animation for people who don't like animation is something that I've heard from a lot of people.
Interesting.
And I wonder if, that, like, that's helping people go back to the theater. I don't know. It's like it's acceptable animation. I wanted just to throw that out to the group because obviously we know
it's
we
so
like it.
It's so weird because it is that, but it's also animation for animation nerds.
Right.
Like, I was going to say.
The amount of people I saw talking afterwards about, like, did you see how they changed the frame rate on this character and how it was different than this character?
Yeah.
And look at the different like layers and stuff. Like, people who are really, really hardcore in animation were also really getting into this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels almost like it's advanced animation fans would get the most out of it, but maybe it just is truly just sheer beauty. I mean, it's so
gorgeous to look at that, like, even if you're like, oh, I'm not really into superheroes, I'm not really into animation, I think you still might like the Spider-Verse movies. They're really good. The characters are so strong and pull you through anything. And then there's all this beauty happening around it, too. They're magnificent movies.
Yeah, I mean, really, it feels like the Venn diagram is, it's like animation for the beauty of animation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it doesn't have that pixely feel. It doesn't have that, like, we just had to get this done and make it look good. We're having fun making this and, like, experimenting.
Well, I also would argue, too, it's like there's something about this animation that feels like a labor of love. And I feel like, regardless of how it's made, and I don't agree with this, I'm just saying, but I think that there's an element of, like, Pixar, they can just make their movies. Disney can just make their movies. And there's sometimes this feeling like, for lack of a better term, it's like a cookie cutter mentality. Like, oh, there's nothing special about this. So you've seen one Pixar movie, and I love Pixar, and I think Soul is one of the best movies that they've done. And I really love Luca, and I feel like Turning Red was fantastic. I'm just saying that, like, whatever. But I think that there's, like, we become immune to them. It's like, I've seen it. But then when you pop in something like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and you voice those characters differently, it looks differently, you make it funnier. Spider-Man, it's like, oh, it just captures your attention. Because I don't think it's like, it's not bringing the superhero audience. I would argue that that's the superhero movie that worked. That and Guardians of the Galaxy 3. But
yeah, I was going to say Guardians 3 worked too.
Yeah, and that was really great too. But also very different than what we've been seeing in superhero movies.
Yeah, even different to the first two. Like, I was saying to someone right after watching three that it's like Guardians 3, that it's like the emo Guardians movie.
Yeah.
And like, and they kind of announced that from the get-go by having the like acoustic B-side version of Radiohead's Creep, not the album version. It's like the acoustic B-side is how they start that movie. And you're like, I understand kind of where I'm at with the tone of this. It was, and yet it was still so funny and still like a really good action story and heartbreaking, all the stuff with Rocket. Like, just, it's so hard to look at that stuff if you care about animals, you know? I mean, it was a good movie. That one
and
worked.
It ended, which is nice,
and
too,
it ended.
Right?
Yes.
It ended.
It sure
or did it? I'd like to argue. Ooh. I'd like to get in here and argue. No, they actually were so careful to introduce us to all these side characters and give them so much life and love. The dog, hello.
Yeah.
And then at the end, like, they could potentially be the new Guardians of the Galaxy. And I walked away being like, I would be okay with these new people. All right.
Sure. Or like, or you don't have to watch another one and you'd be like, I had my three with this crew. Like, either way it works.
Right.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can I throw out my tiny, like, anti-Chris Pratt grenade, which is just like, the less of him that there was in this movie, the better. I feel like this movie was like, we can just pull his character back a little bit. Let's be a little bit more Drax heavy.
You're right.
It works.
It was perfect.
Yeah,
well,
and, like, that's the calibration I like.
Mm-hmm. It was great.
First of all, I want to say two things. One, which is, I love the holiday special. If you've not seen the holiday special, add it to your list of holiday films. It's worth it. It's really fun. And if you want to talk about Drax heavy, it's very Drax heavy. It's and it's fantastic. I think that what I found really interesting about that movie as a third film was, well, we like these characters, so we can, like, go there with them. Like, and I feel like not a lot of movies do that. Like, they allowed us to not have, like, one final, it is a final adventure. It has all the elements, but, like, the characters are somewhat grounded. They are grieving. There are these weird things. And I found that to be actually a really beautiful way to do a third film. I think that people, like, try to get out on a third film in this way that's like The Last Ride or something like that.
Yeah.
Where I feel like, look, the Indiana Jones movie, I have a lot to say about that film as well. And I'm mixed on it. I am mixed on it. Like, I have to watch it again, and I haven't watched it again. So that also makes me think I don't know what I want to say exactly. But I like that the film tried to be different. I also felt like I missed the things that I wanted to see from it. It's like, it's weird. Yeah. It's like, how do you calibrate those two things the right way? And I think that maybe the bigger ensemble allowed Guardians to feel like a Guardians movie, but actually feel more weighted. And I don't know. It made for a more fulfilling conclusion, regardless of whether or not we ever see these characters again.
Yeah. All right. We only have two more clips from a pair of friends who have been on the show this year. So let's listen to them.
Hi, Paul and Amy. I'm Drew Taylor from Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast. And my favorite film of 2023 was The Zone of Interest by Jonathan Glazer. I love this movie because it is absolutely haunting and affecting. I haven't stopped thinking about it, and I saw it several months ago. I'm not sure it's the kind of movie I would recommend to anyone because it is just so disturbing. But technically, it's absolutely mind-blowing. And emotionally, you know, there's nothing that quite moved me or affected me quite as much. If you want to see it, it's about the commandant of the Auschwitz concentration camp, Rudolf Haas, who is played by Christian Friedel, and his family, led by his wife, Sandra Hüller, who live next door to the camp. And it is absolutely disturbing, profound, unforgettable, and essential.
Wow. Another great selling point of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, saying I'm not going to recommend it, but I will, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you think he already got his coconut Christmas cake from Tom Cruise?
He did. I saw it last night.
Mission Impossible?
I saw it. I saw it. Look, it would be ridiculous for him to say Mission Impossible. I you know, I would argue that I think that Mission Impossible, the new one, will get a different shake once we see both halves of it. You know,
it'll get reappraised after you know what the second part is for sure.
Yeah.
Even though I don't think they're calling it Dead Reckoning 2 anymore. They're changing it to some new subtitle.
Yeah. I'm sure they are. Yeah.
But do you know what? Maybe losing out on Drew's love this year is just what Tom Cruise needs to go back to trying to get an Oscar. That's what I want for this man.
I love
it. So Drew has risked his cake for 2024 for everybody's benefit.
Well, there you go.
Drew's a hero.
Well, Charles also is not recommending Mission Impossible, but let's end by throwing a little love towards two more movies that we've already given some love to.
Hey, Paul and Amy, happy holidays. This is Charles Hood from Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast. And it was such a great year for movies, I want to quickly shout out two. One is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, which is hilarious and gorgeously animated. It's got a fabulous score by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. This movie reignited my childhood love of the Ninja Turtles, and my kids are obsessed with it now too, which is so fun. My other favorite is The Holdovers, which will undoubtedly be in my Christmas movie rotation every year from now on. I always love how Alexander Payne just puts his lead characters through the ringer. Matthew Broderick has the bee sting and election. Jack Nicholson throws out his back and about Schmidt. Thomas Hayden Church gets clocked in the face with a motorcycle helmet and sideways. He puts his characters through hell with this kind of Blake Edwardsian physical comedy that I love so much. In this one, the main kid horses around on some gymnastics equipment and dislocates his arm. It looks horribly painful, but it all plays for big laughs and it works so well. The movie's also incredibly touching. It's a new Christmas classic.
Aww.
That's a strong recommendation.
Yeah.
That is. And you know what? Like, now that we've listened to like our buddies come out with their recommendations, one thing that really strikes me is, for the most part, this is a pretty diverse batch of lists, which I think team people in this podcast who said this was a good year for movies, yes. I think that means we win.
I think we do.
I think so.
Y'all didn't know we were in a competition, but we just won. Sorry.
We just found out we're in a competition.
I think that there aren't necessarily like the big obvious movies to congregate around like there might be in some years, mm-hmm. but I think just when you look at like the year as a whole, it's like there's a lot of good stuff.
Especially in horror.
Yeah. But
there was Infinity Pool also. We talked about Talk to Me. There was a couple. What was the... No One Will Save You, is that what it was called?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That was really good.
It was really good. There was a bunch of really good, small, great idea horror movies made for not a ton of money, and that's my world. That's my favorite kind of movie, so I was very pleased with that. So I can't think badly of 2023. It provided a lot of those for me.
No, I was going to say, yeah, it's just, I don't think it was a lot, and that's why these are like diamonds in the rough.
Yeah.
Like, that's why all of the ones that we've mentioned shine so bright.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even say Knock at the Cabin. I kind of loved Knock at the Cabin. I did too. I loved it. I'm into M. Night's current, like, whatever this act he's in his career. I
agree.
I'm here for it. Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciated how cold that movie got. I was like, good job. Yes.
Yeah. Cold blooded.
It's a real.
I thought that was a 2022.
I think it was
this year.
That's how many good movies have come out this year, man. Oh. It's like we can't even hold them into our head, Jess.
Well, here
I can't.
This is what I'll say too about this is like I think this might be our future. You know, if you've been watching anything, you know, in entertainment news, there's been this rash of TV cancellations. Like every show seems to be getting canceled or on their final season. And you know, a lot of people are saying, "Oh, that's due to the strike." Which I agree, they're going to make up money and there's going to be reasons and people's paychecks are high. But I also think that we've reached a breaking point here in like in this system that we've created. We've outgrown it. Like there's not enough people to watch stuff, which I don't think is, I know a lot of people are like, oh, this is bad news. Our industry is dying. And I really believe it to be a different thing. I think our industry is dying for big, giant films. I think that there's going to be a lot more fun interesting smaller films back to like when I was a kid growing up, a lot of $15 million movies, you know, a lot of like that was a Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg like kind of model when they made all those movies. It's like you don't have to make a $150 million movie. It's not going to make its money back. It's not, you know, like let's right. like, and look, there's no more DVDs. So it's going to be streaming. So it's like, well, what can we do? Well, let's make more interesting stuff that's more niche that we can do. And what we've just talked about here is a collection of niche movies. And I think for every holdovers, there's also a plane. And I'm down with plane, by the way. I love plane.
You weren't going to let us get through this year without talking about plane.
I knew it. I was holding my breath. I can't not like plane. But you know what we didn't mention, though, too, is interesting. And I just want to bring it up was John Wick 3.
Four.
I almost brought it up.
Okay.
And I specifically the moment when he just those stairs,
the
man.
Stairmaster
scene.
That scene. Beautiful,
it's all about the stairs.
That scene.
The best stunt I've ever seen in that.
It's incredible stuff. Yeah.
Really, truly amazing.
Now let me ask Jess though, the ending police, did that movie end? Did that movie officially end the franchise?
No, yeah, it doesn't end.
It doesn't
no.
end, but it ended enough. It ended enough.
But did it?
Right. Exactly.
Now look, we didn't talk about John Wick Chapter 4 on Unspooled this year, but we did talk about the original John Wick. And maybe that's a reason to start talking about some of the movies we've talked about this year as we start to wrap up.
That was a smooth transition. I'm on my ninth glass of champagne and you're over here coming up with smooth transitions.
Amy, this has been such a blast. I love just talking about movies. The movies that don't have to make that much of a difference. Just movies that we love. And I had a blast. I know that you are drunk on champagne. I'm here drinking Martinelli's because I got to drive after this. But you know what? We're not done. Because now we must get to business and decide which film from season 4 is worthy of getting on our list for space, right? No more fun. No more just we like it because it's funny and good. No, no, no. Now we are talking about doing the job of this show. But we're going to save that for next week. You got to listen next week. But I want you to think about all the movies that we've done in the last year and think about what you would put on the list. It's a great list of films. But next week, we're going to put them all head to head and see what survives. It's going to be a battle royale, aka The Hunger Games, for 2023's Unspooled. A big thank you to our producer, Josh Richmond, our associate producer, Jessica Cisneros, our engineer, Casey Holford, and our executive producers, Cody Fisher and Amelia Chapelo, and our MVP, Molly Reynolds. Our theme song is by Michael Cassidy, and our fan art is by Kim Troxell. Follow Unspooled on Twitter and Instagram, and join in the conversation about all things Unspooled on the Paul Scheer Discord at discord.gg/Paul Scheer. Unspooled t-shirts are available at tpublic.com/unspooled, and you can get a deck of Unspooled playing cards and more merch at podswag.com. Finally, see the official API list of Unspooled films and more about the show at unspooledpod.com.
Hi there, this is Mary Holland. You may know me from Happiest Season, or Veep, or The Woman in the House Across the Street from the Girl in the Window, or you may know me as Janice Cramps. Huh? I want to wish Comedy Bang Bang a happy 15th anniversary. Wow, 15 years old. Comedy Bang Bang is about to get its driver's permit. I'm so excited for it. And I'm, you know, really grateful because Comedy Bang Bang has brought me so much joy as a listener and a performer. And I'm just very grateful for this community that we have in Comedy Bang Bang. You can hear me and a lot of other very funny people on Comedy Bang Bang wherever you get your podcasts. So what are you waiting for? Tune in.